Welcome to the Pulitzer in Rhode Island podcast, a companion to the collaborative series of programs titled, What is the 21st Century Essay? This series is facilitated by the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Pulitzer Prizes in 2016. By asking, what is the 21st century essay, we aim to explore the changing nature of journalism and the humanities in the digital age, and how writers, scholars, journalists, artists, and others are adapting, shaping, and innovating. The series thematically focuses on environmental issues because of their urgency and relevance to our health, communities, and economy. This podcast will feature journalists, scholars, practitioners, and Rhode Island community members joining us to explore the intersections of journalism, the humanities, and the environment. Please visit rihumanities.org/Pulitzer for more information. Hello, and welcome to the Pulitzer in Rhode Island podcast. I'm Elizabeth Francis, the Executive Director of the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities. Our guest today is Stephen Henderson, the editorial page editor of the Detroit Free Press and the 2014 winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Commentary. Stephen was a keynote speaker for the Essay in Public Conference in Rhode Island on March 18th. The Essay in Public Conference was organized by Martha Elena Rojas from the University of Rhode Island, Wendy S. Walters from the New School, and Patricia Ibarra from Brown University. The Essay in Public Conference was the first event in the collaborative Pulitzer series, What is the 21st Century Essay? So, Stephen, thank you so much for being here and participating in the Essay in Public Conference.
Sure. No, that was a lot of fun. I had a great time, and the audience there was super engaged, I felt, with the questions we were talking about.
Yeah, I really thought so, too, including me. So your talk was basically divided in three parts, where you first talked about Alexander Hamilton and the Federalist Papers, and then you talked about Picasso's large painting Guernica, and then you talked about a project that you have been engaged with over a period in Detroit that's called the Tuxedo Project. And so it would be great to hear a little bit more about this project that you're involved in and to just reflecting on this question of what is the 21st century essay.
Sure. So the Tuxedo Project is my effort to sort of answer the question, what is our obligation, particularly here in the city of Detroit, those of us who are from here, those of us who were born here, what's our obligation to the specific places that we're from? Tuxedo is the street that I was born on. 7124 is the address of the house where my family lived, where I was born. And a few years ago, I drove past it and realized that it was falling into the same kind of decay that's swallowed up massive areas of Detroit. And over the last 4 years, I've sort of embarked on this journey to decide what my obligation is to that address, to that neighborhood, and what could happen, what's possible. And journey is the right word. I mean, I started in one place, which was sort of confusion and uncertainty. Today, I'm in a different place where we have a plan for that address and for many of the other houses that are empty on the block. We have raised a lot of money, but it's a continuing journey in the sense that we don't know what the ultimate end will be for that street or for that house. And we're now sort of engaging the folks who live on that block in the process of trying to figure out for themselves what should come next. And in that way, the project has sort of come to fit into a pretty important theme in my work, which I call recursivity, this idea of revisiting ideas and arguments over and over again over time as a way of refining them and seeing them from sort of different perspectives and angles. And that was really what the speech was about, was that I believe that to be the way argument has always sort of most successfully taken shape. It's not a single iteration, but a sort of repetitive motion and sort of going back over and over to points in an argument as a way to try to see them differently, to try to get to a new space. Picasso's Guernica is a great example of that. That's a single piece of art, but within it are many other pieces of art that he's used in lots of other places to make similar or somewhat different arguments. Alexander Hamilton's work in the Federalist Papers, 51 essays, revisit themes over and over and over again as a way of trying to put them in different contexts and different lights for people to see them in different ways. Tuxedo has become not only just a project that I'm working on, but a project that I've been writing about and doing sort of essay-like work about. The first one was a photo essay. I literally went in and took 400 and some photos of the project and put together an essay around those pictures. It's now morphed to essays about the project itself and the money that it's raised. It's morphed into work looking into not just where I was from there, but where my family is from in Natchez, Mississippi, and where my dad is from, and really where our name is even from in Natchez. Very quickly that has turned into a history, an American history project about slavery and inequality and all of those things. And over time, of course, they will continue to change. The project will change. The writing will change in this sort of recursive way that I think is the way that essay has always taken shape, essay being from the French for trying, making an attempt. I think it's many attempts, not one, that sort of frame the most important work.
Yeah, this sense of inquiry and returning to an idea that gets reshaped or expanded or connected differently, I think is such an interesting approach to the question of what is the 21st century essay. And I wondered if you could kind of spin out a little bit from your position at the Detroit Free Press as the editorial page editor of where you'd love to see this head for journalism. This is the Tuxedo Project is one that is your own work, but you're also seeing lots of different work out there from your professional position in journalism. Sure. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you see happening now, both the perils and the possibilities.
I think the technology that we're all sort of grappling with and trying to figure out both how it works and what it means to the craft is I think the primary sort of source of change in the essay space, as well as with other writing, of course. The interactivity of the work today is really different than it was, even 5 or 10 years ago, let alone 15 or 20. I used to say all the time that for 200 years we had sort of the last word in argument at the newspaper, right? Especially on local issues, we'd write an editorial or a column about something, and really that was about it. I mean, you might write a letter, I might print it, I might print a portion of it, but there was no real dialogue that would grow up around. No active and sort of live dialogue that could grow up around that issue. Now, of course, I say we have the first word on many of these issues, but it's almost never the last word, because almost immediately it attracts arguments from other people who either agree or don't agree. And the pieces take on lives of their own, far beyond what we ever intended when we published them in the print paper or online. And so that changes everything about the work, in my view. It changes the way you think about it when you're doing it. It changes the way you live with it after it's published. You live with it far longer. Pieces have much longer lifespans now than they used to because of that interactivity. And it changes the way that you think about the pieces afterward. I mean, it'd be very hard for me to quantify how frequently something that we've written or something that I've written elicits a response that changes the way I see it. And so that the next time I come back to write about it, I'm informed by that that other piece of argument. Even if it's not a reversal of the way I think about it, often it's a new dimension or direction that I'm taking from readers who 5 or 10 or 15 years ago I didn't hear from in quite the same way or interact with with quite the same intensity. And so I think that's the main challenge we have, is figuring out how that works, how that affects the work, and how to build on it. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a monumental leap forward in the idea of the essay, to sort of think of it as an interactive tool, a more interactive tool than it historically perhaps has been. And I don't have the answer to what that is. I mean, I think we're all sort of grappling with that every day in this business and in others. But I do think that's the space that we're all thinking of. One thing, if I could add, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who I think is one of the, you know, premier essayists of our time, recently said that his interaction, his constant interaction with readers, is actually stealing some space from him. In other words, that he doesn't feel like the unformed thought or idea that he has any space anymore, because if he shares that on Twitter or somewhere online, it is immediately attacked as though it were a final thought and criticized as though it were a fully formed thought. And he sort of confessed to looking for more of that quiet sort of private space that you need in order to form your ideas. I think that's a really important and significant iteration of exactly what I'm talking about, the way in which technology has changed the work of the essayist in that interactive sense.
Yeah, that I mean, I think that really captures this dynamic of both opening up dialogue and ideas being in interactivity with each other.
Yes.
And that also that creates a situation where you don't have control over the idea, and also the room for ambiguity or something being provisional is not not so available anymore. And yeah, and Twitter seems like a really great example of that.
Twitter is the most unforgiving. It's the most
unforgiving and a constant process of appropriation and remixing and I think that really gives us a lot to kind of think about. And I wonder if you could say a little bit about how you, when I think it was Wendy who reached out to you for the conference, what did you think about this idea of, you know, asking this question, what is the 21st century essay, as the focus of a conference that was connected to a celebration of the Pulitzer Prizes?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. You know, I was puzzled for a while, I think, about what precisely that meant. What, you know, was it sort of an anticipation of a radical shift in the role of the essay or the essayist? Was it sort of a question, like an open-ended question, that, you know, is there a form or a difference or a audience or delivery difference that is out there? But sort of over time and in the context of, you know, 100 years of the Pulitzer Prize is celebrating in one form or another essay writing, as they have both in the editorial category, the commentary category, which is a more recent innovation. I think 30 years they've been doing that, and I would also add criticism to that space. I sort of started to think about how it has changed and what has what's really different about what people are writing now versus what people are writing in the teens or 20s of the last century. And that was part of how I sort of came to give that recursivity speech, which I give not infrequently about writing. It's one of my sort of mainstays when I'm asked to talk about writing, is some form of that speech. But thinking about it in terms of that, the constant of the recursivity that I've seen across that time, right, and even further back, also in the context of how it's changing with technology now, right? That technology has I think more radically altered the space than almost anything else. I kept thinking, what a wonderful opportunity to go and talk with other people who are maybe thinking about these same things and struggling with these same things, to hear sort of their reaction to it. One of the great parts of the conference, I thought, was the panel that was before my speech, where six different people who were sort of involved in the essay space talked about their work and how they sort of do it. And they were from very different walks of life and places in journalism and academia. I don't often get asked, I should say, to do that, to talk about the craft in that way.
Right, where the mirror gets turned the other direction, where you're usually the one that's asking the questions, and but instead you were being asked. That was something that we were excited about in the design of the conference. So I guess the final question that I thought we could talk about a little bit was this idea of returning to themes that change over time and trying something over and over again. And the way that you've talked about it in terms of the Tuxedo Project, it's changed, that it's gone down different pathways, that it's a kind of a spreading network almost, and that it's led to new connections. And I wonder if that is something that is happening in journalism overall, where journalism is in a more dynamic dialogue in relation to the places that it's actually situated. And I'm thinking about Detroit and how important this project is, both reflective of, but advancing change, or a certain kind of change, a very personal change, you know, but change that you seek to influence, but, you know, in terms of your block, your house, that your community. But how has it changed your relationship to Detroit overall, or how you see Detroit as a place and your sense of connection to it?
Well, I mean, that's something that I've sort of had to grapple with since I came back to Detroit in 2007 from Washington and Baltimore and Chicago, where I had been away. You know, I mean, my work here is by definition more personal than it can be anywhere else, because I am from here, and this is my home in a way that no place else really could be. I've sort of struggled with defining, you know, what that meaning looks like from year to year, and the Tuxedo Project, you know, really takes me in a very different direction than I think I ever suspected. Number one, it never occurred to me that the the ills of the city, the depopulation and disinvestment that I've seen go on my entire life, you know, for some reason it never struck me that that would visit on something personal to me, like the house where I was born. I mean, that was a real eye-opener when that happened. But then also, I never would have imagined the role I might have played in trying to sort of make sense of that and try to find a different space. And that has changed the way that that my work looks here in Detroit. I mean, most of my job really is about policy and analyzing policy and thinking about policy and advocating for policy that will make change. That's really distant to me now. It seems really distant from something like the Tuxedo Project, which there certainly are some policy solutions that would help that project in that neighborhood, but it's a far more individual task. The work that needs to be done over there is also very granular and individual and every day. And it is about organizing the folks who live in that community to be able to think for themselves about what they want to do. They all want something different, but I think there's a big leap from there to what does different look like and what does it ask of us as individuals. I mean, I think Tuxedo has given me a much stronger sense of that individual role and responsibility as a Detroiter, as somebody who's from here and every, you know, great thing that's happened to me in life ultimately has its roots in my early life here. You know, what's my role in trying to help this city sort of get back up on its feet, off of its knees? That's a really, for as a journalist, that's a unique experience for me. As I said, no place else could I have had that experience, and I think it changes me and the work in a way that that's unalterable going forward. I mean, I just see it all very differently in that I see it all from that individual role much more clearly than I ever did before. Some people might think that crosses a line, even as a journalist, that you know, it's not supposed to be about us. But I think it actually makes the advocacy work, the policy advocacy work, stronger because it can be more refined by this sort of ground level individual viewpoint.
Yeah, that's informing it. And I also, how it creates a sense of individual responsibility at a time when I think that has become more and more important, of people really staking a claim about what their role is and what their responsibilities are. So thank you. Thank you, Stephen, for joining us today. And I really appreciate your engaging with Rhode Island again about this, and we hope that your thoughts go far and wide through this podcast. So thank you, Stephen, and listeners. You can visit rihumanities.org/Pulitzer to learn more about this series and to find more episodes of the Pulitzer in Rhode Island podcast. Thank you.